Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the channel and another video. Let's play the intro and then we'll get right into it because there's so much to talk about. Yes, hello everybody and welcome back to the channel, and joining me once again, my regular Melvin. Melvin, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Not too bad at all. Just had a nice evening, made us some sausages. Well, I think they were sausages, but I'm not sure. I'll have to look them up later.
Yeah, and just to answer a quick question, you're not parked on a bus, you're actually in a place of residence and everything, you know, because there's a big thing about Arsenal and being parked on buses at the moment.
Oh, of course, yeah, no, I'm all right. No, I'm not that defensive at the moment, no.
Good. Good. Well, obviously, I didn't do one after the Atalanta game. Just to give a quick synopsis on that one. Very dull, very boring game. Thought we could have got away with it with a Martinelli goal. And David Raya, again, for me, gets him out of the match for that. Was there anything you want to add on Atalanta, Melvin?
Not really. No. The penalty save, double save was brilliant. And that's all there was anyone to remember about it. I mean, my son went. And he had, I think it was, on the way back, 18 different ways of travel to get home.
Oh, wow.
It was absolute. You had to get a bus to the stadium and from the stadium. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let you in to get... You had to actually... Well, the Arsenal supporters had to meet and get on a bus to the stadium. You had to get bussed in and bussed out. But then it was trains, boats and aeroplanes, or whatever that film was called. And that's what he did.
Yeah, so what they all had to get on this specific bus, otherwise
from the town square to the stadium. Yeah,
wow, okay. How big was this bus then? Or was there multiple?
It might be more than one bus, there might be like,
yeah. I was gonna say, I was like, oh, how crikey, how big is this bus?
It's probably as wide as a goal mouth,
yeah. I was gonna say, it's probably the size of the Chelsea coach, isn't it, for the squad,
yeah.
But no, so the big one obviously was Sunday's game against Manchester City, Melvin, and the lineup obviously had the quick change in there of Ben White obviously coming out because of a suspected knee injury. I didn't see anything of that. But then Calafiori got to start at left back and Timber obviously moved across to right back. Now, I know we're going to speak about Calafiori quite a lot coming up throughout the synopsis of the game, but were you happy with that? Was there no problem? I know for a few weeks you've been saying to me, James, the big man, the beast, has got to get in eventually. Were you happy that the beast finally did get unleashed?
I wanted him at left back and I wanted Timber at right back, if you recall.
Yeah.
When I had a phone call from a pal of mine who seems to get the teams before me, the Spanish guy, no, it's not really. And he said, I'm happy because he doesn't particularly like Ben White. He said, I'm happy Ben White's not playing. I said, what's happening? Timber's playing right back and Calafiori's playing. I mean, yes, that's what I want. That's what I want. So I was very happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I was a bit shocked that Trossard was in the middle still. I thought away to Man City, we needed something a bit stronger with, just needing something a little bit tighter. I'm not, well, as things worked out, it didn't work out, did it? But I thought we needed something a bit stronger in midfield against Man City. But as it happened, it didn't work out too bad. Up to half time.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I had no real sort of problems with it. I thought to myself, is it going to be, I hope it's more Havertz is going to be down the middle instead of playing in the midfield. But I understood what he wanted. He wanted them to swap sort of like we did against Spurs the week before and everything. And pretty much, like you said there, we're not blessed, you know, with any option. The only other option would have been Nanweary. And I think that could have been a baptism of fire for him. I mean, I think he's ready and I want to see him play. But I think to play him against Manchester City could have been quite a big risk. So there weren't no real problems there for me. But Melvin, just to start the game off, what was it, 6 or so seconds in, Rodri's already on the deck. What did you make of that one from Havertz? For me, I think you've just blocked the path that he's trying to run into, and just caught one because you're in the way. I don't think Havertz maliciously. I know that there's a lot of Man City fans, and apparently Graham Lasso abroad said that Havertz should have been sent off for it, which just sums up to me everything I need to know about Graham Lasso. I didn't even think Graham Lasso. I didn't think he was a good footballer.
Did he get Dixon sent off? When he was crying. He loves to cry, doesn't he? When he's crying, I think he might have been involved in the first booking out of two when Robin Van Persie got sent off at Southampton, I think, as well. Graham Lasso is not what I would have called, when he was a footballer, an honest footballer, in my opinion. He had an angle with him every time. There's always an angle to make up for his deficiencies. He might have looked good on the ball, but he's one of those. You can look at his forehead, and it's got, if you look close enough, you can see anti-Arsenal written in it. You know, he's one of those people. There's quite a few of those around at the moment. Well, there's been quite a few for ages. But, and they seem to find the TV companies seem to love, that's what they do when they interview them. The ones that aren't ex-Arsenal players, even some Arsenal players, ex-Arsenal players, they look at them and go, can I look at your forehead? Yep, you'll do. And you go. And that's it. But the getting back to the Havertz situation, when I first saw it, I thought, he's got to go because it's Arsenal. Because I've never seen anything like that before. I've never seen a sending off in the first 5 seconds of a game.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know what happened with the clash. I mean, let's talk about we'll talk later about the dark arts. To me, that was the touch of the dark arts, all right? With Rodri and all that. And Rodri is the strongest player this side of the River Thames. And he suddenly goes down from habit. No, I'm not having it. I'm not having it. I think that was a plan. I really do. They know what Havertz does. He runs in like most forwards do. I think they just get in the way and just go down. You never know with this referee. He might send him off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's got previous, this referee.
Only a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But obviously, moving forward, that initial first 10, 15 minutes, I thought that we did look very, very ropey. I thought Man City were piling it on a bit on us. And I don't know if it was because it's a new sort of back five that haven't all played together yet, and also the fact that Rice and Partey are still, I mean, Partey for me, I actually do think he did a really, really solid job this game, especially the second half, being like a screen for that back four, five, six, whatever you want to call it in the end that we had to play. But I thought they were all a bit, you know, not up to speed, and there was a few warning signs from Man City. Gundogan obviously had that one where he controlled it and volleyed it and it went wide. I think that was the first initial warning shot. And then obviously getting his 100th goal, Haaland.
There was one before that though, James, wasn't there? I thought they had a chance or a half chance before they actually scored their goal.
I can remember the Gundogan one that was the volley where he like controlled it and then smashed it. But other than that, the one that was after it where I think it was Gundogan again with the free kick that hit the post. That was after Haaland scored, and I think just before we equalised. But obviously the Haaland goal, Calafiori, I think Savio, whatever his name is, he's been a brilliant player this season.
What a player!
He really is a completely. I mean, I'm not embarrassed or have any real reservations about Calafiori being spun out of position by him. Because I think he does that to maybe 9 out of 10 players in the league.
We were asleep, though, don't we, for that goal? I mean, yeah, he beat him, he cut inside and he left him for dead. But where was the rest of our team?
That
opened up the Red Sea, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching it again, and I watched it back before we come on tonight just to refresh myself and everything as well. Thomas Partey still, for me, I don't know who he's jogging towards. But it's not towards the ball, and it's not towards any player that's a danger. I'm thinking in my head, what are you trying to do there? Is it just a case of, I better look like I'm making some intent to do something, because there's no way my legs are, you know, I know that everyone's legs were shot towards the end, but he looked like his legs were shot there and then. It was only 10 minutes.
Yeah, he rallied, yeah. I think.
Yes. Definitely.
But what the bullish thing is, I always look at the pluses of mine. The plus is, yes, he's that's one of his better games for us for a long time. But just imagine in a few weeks' time where someone might cut inside our left back and the space will be filled by Marino, someone like that.
100%.
All of a sudden, everything changes. So I'm very, very confident, very happy. Because Marino, again, he's 6'2", is he, or something? Good in the air. Corners as well. He's going to be another threat. This guy, we've forgotten about him. I know he's been only with us 2 minutes. We've actually forgot. I haven't. I did forget about that. But when I saw that on Sunday, I thought, oh, my God, hold on a minute. Give it a couple of weeks, a few weeks. We're going to have someone there to just be there, pick up the loose ball, and it will make us a different team. It will allow Rice, for example, to play freer. And I think he's playing with a... He looks like he's playing with a handbrake on at the moment, to me, yeah. Rice.
100%.
He's not the same Rice as last season.
No way. Yeah. Yeah.
So definitely. I can't wait for him to get in the team. But as you say, the first 10, well, 15, 20 minutes, it was like going back 5 years, wasn't it, when we used to play City? It was like hitting us from every angle. It was like, wait, what is this? Then all of a sudden, we slowly, slowly got a little bit more possession. And then we, how do we talk about that goal? What's a goal?
Yeah.
What's a goal?
Yeah, and that's what I was just about to come into, because obviously, I think after the result and everything else that's transpired since the weekend, what's been lost is how brilliant the two goals Arsenal scored were. And the main reason for that is because everyone that supports Man City, and they've all been going on about, oh, the Arsenal tears, the Arsenal tears. Oh, I think the Man City tears of how this first goal shouldn't have been allowed because Kyle Walker's out of position. I mean, Martinelli, who, again, he's another one I want to praise. I thought, from an attacking standpoint, not as elite as what he normally is, but much better. And again, for a second, you know, league game in a row, what he had to do defensively was so, so good. But he lays it off to Calafiori, and it's an absolute worldie of a hit, isn't it? It's one that he just strikes it so well. And the celebration.
Nice, though, James. Yeah, celebration was brilliant. He meant it. But what makes it even better? I mean, it was fantastic. But what makes it better for me, all the Arsenal supporters that didn't go to the game, we were sitting down watching the telly, and the camera was right behind him when he hit it. And we saw it in it seemed to be slow motion, didn't it? Just you think, this is, as it left his foot, you're thinking, oh my God, what's happening here? And you think, unless a pigeon flies across and stops it, this ball's going in the net. And it was wonderful. And it, as you say, the celebrations were, it's like, thanks, boss, for signing me. He went across to Arteta, didn't he? Thanks for playing me. Thanks for signing me. It was one of those.
Well, I was on with Mike and a few others on his podcast last night, and I was saying to them that I think Arteta was sort of in shock at when he's picked him up. He's like, whoa. He's like, Arteta was sort of a bit baffled. And then obviously he's got the set piece guy as well when he's picking him up. So there's obviously some kind of big bond that's been created there. But yeah, definitely, like you said, thank you for signing me, and thank you for obviously believing in me to give me my debut, my full debut against the champions and arguably the next most potent attack in the country. You know, these guys are, you know, killers, basically, like we've said. And he went out there, and like you said as well, I think as soon as it's left his foot, you're watching it going, oh, is this going in, I think. And then, when it hit the net, it was a superb strike. It just reminded me of the old days of the 2-1s against Chelsea with Winterburn and Silvinio, when they absolutely, you know, sometimes when you watch Arsenal, you're like, let's not do that. Someone just smack one. Can we just hit one and see what happens? And we haven't had a lot of players that have done that over the years. I think the last real one that we saw like that was the Saliba one against Bournemouth away, wasn't it, when Zinchenko put his head in his hands when Saliba just smashed one from quite far.
It was a left way.
Yeah, it was. But that was a absolutely brilliant goal. And then Arsenal, for me, like you said, started kicking it up a notch. We were in the ascendancy, a lot more possession, and then we have that great chance that falls to Trossard. And I know a lot of people have said it's difficult. For me, I think he has to do better there. I think he rushed it because he was panicking again. I think it was Diaz that was closing him down. I think he's just worried there about what's going on. But for me, he had to get that on target.
You know what, James? I don't want to see Trossard. I know he can't play there all the time in over 90 minutes. I just want to see Trossard in the box, because outside the box, forget it, he does his damage in the box. And if you wanted to fall to a player who was on the pitch at the time, it would have been him, that chance. And yet he seemed to snatch it a little bit for whatever reason. And that's unlike him in the box. Normally, he's as cool as a cucumber. So I was a bit disappointed with him there. But as it happens, you never know. If's a very big word. If he would have scored that, would they have scored one? You know, you don't know. But yeah, it would have been nice to score that one. It would have been another lovely goal. So, a bit disappointed there.
Yeah. And then we get one of the corners and Gabriel goes up. And I think that's the first warning shot. And he knew. I think the first one is an easier chance than the second one, which he does score.
Yeah, he was annoyed with himself, the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the second one as well, again, overlooked for me is the Saka delivery. I think obviously because he had to come off at half time. I think the delivery is so pinpoint. And then again, Carl Walker for me before Gabriel heads it, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to tap him and, you know, give it, I don't know what he's, it just made me laugh. I was like, I don't know what you're trying to do here.
And the ref was looking at him thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you actually, seriously, what are you doing? It's like he lost his eyesight and he goes, are you there? Are you there? It was a bit like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the first one, they put Doku on him, who's their smallest player, I believe. So that was just suicidal. So I thought, well, they're not going to do that again. And yeah, I mean, for me, I think all the other players now as well, I think Jova, the set piece coach, and Arteta have all just basically said, all of you have to make like a screen and just let Gabriel be the last one, because he's just so pinpoint and so direct in the air. I think, what is it, 16 goals he's scored since he's come in, which is the most of any centre-back, and 14 of them have been headers. I think only two of them have been scored with his feet. So he really is an absolute, you know, machine at doing this. And yeah, it was another beautifully headed goal.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's not off. Well, the last time we scored two goals away at City was the last time we beat them.
Yeah.
Giroud and...
That's it. Yeah, Cazorla.
So we don't normally score two goals at City, and we normally let in four or five. Yeah. So there's been a small change there, hasn't there?
Definitely. And then to wrap up this first half, obviously more injury time is being played than what's allotted. And then you have the incident where Trossard, for me, I think he's silly here in two instances. One is the challenge on Bernardo Silva. That, to me, I felt he's not looking for the ball. He's there's no intent there other than, I'm just going to leave one on you because you're annoying, which he is. I mean, he was more annoying after the game, actually, Bernardo Silva, than he was during. But, he lamps him with one and then he just boots the ball away. And sadly, that again produces a red card, Melvin. And what did you make of the whole situation? Because there's so much to discuss.
Let's unravel this one, shall we? Yeah. First of all, I was spitting feathers at him because even if, like you say, that guy's a wind-up merchant, the best way in football to wind someone up who you think is a wind-up merchant is to beat them. We've beaten them 2-1. It's a 3.5 seconds for half-time. There's no excuse that you're doing something, I think, very selfish because you feel upset. You're sacrificing the team's position. I don't like that in a footballer. You've got to give everything for the team. Honestly, you've got to give everything for the team. And in that split second moment, his thought was, I don't like you. I'm going to leave one on you. Why? Does it help the team? Obviously not. There's only, you've got to, in life, there's ups and downs. You think about risk reward. There was no reward in doing that. There was only risk. And the odds were so much against him. You think, why did you do it? And when he kicks the ball away, there's the argument that he didn't have enough time to think. He half kicked it, so he was holding back. Whatever he was, once you make that first mistake, he gave the referee a great opportunity of booking him when he with the second one, because the ref in his mind's going, that's a 50% booking. The challenge may not be a booking. It may be, it may not. Let's put it 50% booking. That's a 50% kick away equals a yellow card. So in a normal world, which we don't live in, I would say it's a sending off. It's a booking, which means it's a sending off. But it's not a normal world. We can come to that later, of football and the way things are. Because for example, we've seen loads of people kick a ball away, jump into people, blah, blah, blah. They don't get booked. I mean, Haaland jumped into two of our defenders. I mean, that was just nasty. And nothing was wrong. But the referee didn't speak to him, which you don't expect. I think he was going to speak to him and saying, you're coming around the weekend. You know, you're coming around again the weekend because I've got your favourite whiskey on the table. But it is. I thought we learned a little bit of savvy. That showed no savvy. It shows that wasn't professionalism. That was downright amateurism for a professional footballer. Yeah, you get it in Sunday morning, but you shouldn't get it if you're a minute away from walking off the pitch 2-1 up at the stadium, the Etihad, against them, and going in 2-1 up. Right, lads, now what to do second half? We've got momentum. Let's keep going. And who knows what would have happened? We might have been drawn. We might have got beat. But for doing that, you've got the chance to say, that's it. Now we've got to shut up shop. There's no way we can play the way we played in the first 45. And it was terrific. So it was just, I sometimes lose faith in footballers when they do certain things. Like when they let you down. So I know he scored a lot of important goals, but when certain footballers do something like that, I'm thinking, you've got a couple more chances now. If you do that again or something similar, I'll lose faith in you. And as far as I'm concerned, you're not for me, because that was poor. Poor judgment. And I don't think, as I say, if everyone was treated the same, I've got no complaints with that at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is where obviously my biggest bone of contention comes from, is that obviously for me, I think Trossard has been silly because he's done it. Like you said, he's let the emotions overcome him. And then he's, you know, in the game where you want everybody to be as hyper-focused as possible and as best as we can to keep it 11 versus 11, because like we've said, you know, we know what all these refs are like, and the majority of them, you know, biggest game of the season. Again, you've got the two teams there that are fighting for the league and probably will fight for the league at the end of the season. It's going to be one of these two teams that win it. But again, we're not talking about the players and how brilliant they are. We're talking about how bad Michael Oliver is as a referee. And this is coming from both sides, because the Man City fans are absolutely scathing at the fact that Havertz hasn't been sent off for what happened with Rodri at the beginning. And they're also scathing because of the Rodri injury. They reckon that Partey's to blame for him doing what he's doing. And again, that to me is that injury, that ACL. I've spoken to Jack, who deals with that on a basis constantly. Because of the medical profession and everything else that he does for work. And he's gone, James, that's a no contact injury. That's the way he's planted his foot. And that's not a contact that's caused that rotation. That's himself. And again, that's him frying himself into a position with somebody to try and protect. For me, it looked like he was trying to draw a foul again or win a penalty. And he's done his knee in the process. And that to me, I go on about it. I don't ever wish injury on anybody, and especially a player who on his day is probably the best in the world in his position. Oh, yeah,
and he's very, not just on his day, he's very consistent.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, he was talking about how all these games and how they need rest. Well, Guardiola gave him 6 weeks worth of rest after the Euros. He's barely played for Man City. He's played in this game and now he's got injured. To me, I thought to myself... Yeah.
Sorry, please,
Melvin, go on.
I'm not too sure that he could have been 100% fit. I think he might have pushed him into this game.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah,
which is what he needs to do. I think because for little contact, or no contact, sorry, for him to do what he's done, there must have been an issue there to start with. There must have been a weakness there. So to do that, I'm no doctor, right? But to do something like that, it's a type of injury you would imagine that there's something quite not right. We play through it, and then something, like 100-to-1 chance happens again, and you hit that same spot with the same pressure, the same timing, and it goes completely. I think that's what's happened.
Yeah. But,
you know, because Rodri is such a good player.
Oh, he is.
And yet, when he was on the field, we were winning.
That's it. I mean, they keep talking about how, well, you know, no De Bruyne, no Rodri and all this. I mean, we've had players missing in so many games. You know, when it was Rob Holding against them, instead of Saliba, they were going, oh no, it's not just one player don't make your team, one player don't make your team. And yet it makes me laugh how quick football goes and how quick people's opinions change when it doesn't suit the agenda that they've got. When it doesn't suit that agenda, they can move the pieces. But when Arsenal say it, those pieces can't be moved. But again, going back to Trossard and this red card, Melvin, there's been over 70 instances of people kicking the ball away this season. Four players have been booked for it. Three of them are Arsenal players, which are Trossard, Declan Rice and Saliba. And the other one is Bruno Fernandes for Man United. Two of those three for Arsenal have resulted in second yellows and red cards, which have affected outcomes of the games, as we've seen.
Yeah, in both games. You've dropped.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And I look at it, and Michael asked last night when we were on the show, is that a conspiracy? To me, that's not a conspiracy because it's fact.
Exactly.
Over half of the people that have been booked for this have been Arsenal players. So it just makes me think, and a lot of people go back to the Doku situation where they say, well, Arsenal were trying to take that free kick further up and he's kicking the ball back to where it originally goes. And Oliver's all right with that because it's being kicked back to the original place. Now, for me, if you're going to start doing this, it's like what Mikel Arteta said after the game. He said, I've got no problem with it as long as it's consistent. And he said, by the end of the season, I hope we see 150-odd bookings for this. And he said, yes, there's going to be games where there's going to be 10, 9, 8, maybe. Because for me now, anyone, regardless of who you play for or what have you, if you kick the ball away, regardless of the circumstances...
Or flick it away.
You're booked. They have to follow through. For me, this has to be followed through now, that anyone that just does that, you know, if the opposition have got the foul or it's their ball and you flick it, kick it, whatever, you have to be booked now. That's what I want to be seeing.
What about, I mean, you're saying that with the Doku situation, I watched it again and you watched it recently. So I watched it again yesterday. But I thought he kicked it back, but the referee allowed us to take it 5 yards forward. So it wasn't where the referee wanted to take it. So Doku was out of order. He didn't put it back to where it should be taken. You look at it again. You watch it, he kicks it into our half. Well, we take the free kick from the Man City half. So it wasn't, you can't make an excuse that they kicked it back to where it should have been from.
That's the line that they're spouting and using.
Well, they do anything. You know, they're very good.
I know.
What they've done, all the goalposts now are differently made. They've got wheels on them. So they can move them. PGMOL have got these special wheels, which you can't see from the television, but I've been to the ground and you can just see the tops of the wheels. And they move them to make... I mean, every time there's a decision about us, for or against, they suddenly move the goalpost. I mean, the greatest one was against Man City last year at home when he had a yellow card, the midfielder, who come on.
Yeah, Kovacic. Yeah.
Kovacic. And he had a nasty one. A booking. It was a booking, the second one, no doubt about it. And the reason it was given, do you remember what the reason was?
Yeah, they didn't want to spoil the game. Yeah.
Thank you. So what happened on Sunday?
Yeah.
It's just, they make it up as they go along.
Both them last season, especially I think it was the second one that was on Odegaard. Their ankle breaker, fouls. It weren't just a... I'm doing that to stop a counter. You know, I'm doing that just to break the game up and everything. Sorry, like I've got to do it. Otherwise, that was with malice of he's doing me every time now. So I'm going to specifically, it seemed like it was premeditated. Yeah. It's like that's Odegaard. He's a key player. Bang, have that.
Unless the referees are as thick as you like, they're bent, and I'm not sure which way around it is.
I think they're both, Melvin.
They could be.
I think they're as thick as you like, and they're because. For me as well, and we're both, in the corporate world as per, per se. If I take a job from someone that owns that club in a league that's also owned by the people that own that club, and how's that not a conflict of interest?
Yeah, conflict of interest, big time. But you've got to remember.
I don't understand.
Well, you've got to remember is if you don't understand, all you've got to do is. Think of power and money, and then you understand.
Yeah.
It's all to do with power and money. It's listen, we can't trust who top echelons of football, life, whatever you like to call it, politics, blah, blah, blah. Who do you actually trust, seriously? You used to trust them all. But the last 10, 20 years, it's got older than a minute. If it smells rotten, tastes was the expression, looks rotten, smells, and it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, or whatever. And that's what it's like. It's like, hold on a minute, I'm seeing it with my own eyes. And to my, when have you ever, apart from that, there might have been other times that I've missed it, Arsenal had Man City last year, when have you ever heard someone say, he never got sent off because it would have spoiled the game? No, that ain't it. Well, it's all, that's not in the rules, is it? But I thought you've got to play by the rules, James. They told us that last week.
Yeah.
But that's not in the rules, is it? Is it on, I think it's rule 38, B, subsection C, that even if a geezer lobs someone a right hand, you don't send them off if it's two top teams because it might spoil the game. I must have missed that one. It's obviously in there because they said it. And if they're not using common sense, this is a point I want to make as well, get off me, Niles. If the referees are no longer allowed to use common sense, then we might as well get the game played by ref by robots. That at least it'll be even-handed. Let's get robots to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's who controlling the robots, though, isn't it? Who's programming the AI? That's the problem. You know. But for me, I spoke to Neil about it after the game. He was, you know, he rang me up and he was very heated, and we had a good discussion. And then we spoke to each other earlier as well. And I was saying to him, you know, after what happened to Liverpool, and that was wrong. What happened to Liverpool last season? I believe that referee.
Was that Liverpool one with Spurs?
You know, when they played Spurs, yeah, and the goal that was given.
That wasn't bent. That was a complete idiotic mistake.
Yeah,
Nothing to do with.
No.
I had no problems with the VAR then.
Yeah.
What made me upset, James, was that they were saying, "I've seen it." How can you say to someone you're checking something? And I think the expression was, "I've seen it." How can you say, "Well, that means it is a goal or isn't a goal"? All you're saying that you've seen it, and that's what they took the clue from, whether to give a goal or not.
Yeah.
I mean, surely when you're, someone must have been sitting there in the FA and go, "You've seen it. Well, what does that mean? Is that a goal or is that a foul?" No, I've seen it. All right. So we're determined if it's a goal or not by you saying I've seen it. So we're just guessing. And that's what they did. That was ridiculous. That's totally, you can't blame the people at VAR. You've got to blame the top people at VAR for being so idiotic and stupid, not realising there's a big flaw in your communication. Because
yeah.
It's all about communication with the referee and VAR. If you haven't got that right, what's the point of having it?
Yeah. The thing for me is that after that happened, and I was, you know, as much as I dislike Liverpool, have no love for Liverpool, I was like, that's wrong. That's totally, yeah, wrong. You know, I was backing them, like you said, 100%. But since that incident happened, that ref on the day, and I believe the person that was on the chief of the VAR that day, haven't reffed the Liverpool game because Liverpool said, we don't want them doing our games anymore. So I don't know. Well, I do know, because I think if Arsenal were to present this case to somebody, we'd have it dismissed, I think. Because
definitely.
We just I don't know why Arsenal now don't go, do you know what, Oliver? There's been two games. Michael Oliver is trusted as the best ref in the nation. It's like having the strongest hands in prison, you know. It's not something, you know, it's not something you want to be really proud of, but there you go. If there's been so many instances with him specifically that haven't done us any favors. And Melvin, I watch the boxing and I also watch the cage fighting, and there's certain fighters and their promoters or even their camps, and they go, he screwed me, that judge screwed me that time, or that ref screwed me. There's so much at stake, not even just from the sporting value of the points and wanting to win, but the money that's involved in it. I think now you should really go, I don't want him involved in Arsenal games. And I don't think that's too much to ask for.
The problem is that A, we get turned down, right? And the second thing is, if we start not wanting to have referees ref us that have got something against us, we'll have no refs to ref us because they're all there's a great stat came out today. Absolutely a table. Someone put up a table. I should have bloody copied it. He's given us in the last 60 odd games that he's refereed us 7 red cards. I think 64 games. I'm not sure, I think 64 games or 64 bookings he's given us, and 7 red cards. How many red cards has he given City? Correct. And if you go down the table, the only teams that have got less red cards than us, we're at the top of the red card list with him. The teams that he's getting less cards to are much less than us, apart from City, who are at the bottom, are teams that have, the last few seasons, that teams have got played in the Championship. So he's going to give them less cards, he's refereed them less. And obviously, he ain't going to referee the bottom teams that much anyway. So it doesn't look good. If you see this chart about how many bookings he's given and how many sending off he's given, with 7 against 0. I mean, come on. I'm sure if we actually... Well, let's face it. Was he the referee when we played him at home, City, last year?
Yeah.
I think he would. Right. Yeah. Now, that should have been a sending off, all right? Yeah. So you can't say that, well, Man City have been impeccable when they've played with that referee. There's no... We've picked one game out, and that one game, they should have had someone sent off. And I think that if you stretch it, I'm not talking about really stretching it, Haaland, for his actions, that was reckless what he did twice. First one, he might have got a booking with Saliba. On another day, wearing another shirt, he would have probably got a booking. But the second one, that to me, if you saw that in a South American game, that would have been a punch-up, a proper punch-up, right? And he would have been sent off. He would have been sent off. And I think that if you get, even in the second or Championship, someone does that, there's a chance the player would get sent off. And I just think it never went for the ball. I mean, it's reckless. Never went for the ball. The only thing is, he did it against a big, strong geezer. He didn't kick his legs or double-footed. But as a body-to-body goes, does something have to be dangerous to get sent off? No, because when you push someone, you can get sent off, right? So that's not dangerous. When you push someone to the floor, like Jovino did in his debut against Newcastle away, do you remember? With Barton.
Barton sucked him in and he reacted.
So what I'm saying is, there's no way that Jovino hurt that geezer on the deck, right? He just pushed him, right? And yet, this geezer... barged this geezer, could have knocked his teeth out if he hit him wrongly, and yet nothing, not even a booking, not even a talking to, nothing. So I do get frustrated. And I put out there, I don't know if you read it the other day, I said, if we buy a 25 goal a season striker, a fast zip like winger, and another top quality midfielder, we would win every league in the world. We could win every league in the world, apart from the Premier League, because the PGMOL won't allow us to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone always says, you know, we need to buy a winger. Oh, we need to buy a number 6. Oh, we need to buy a striker. We need to buy a ref.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
We need to buy a referee. I don't know what... I mean, the Cronkies have obviously got the... Colorado Rapids. I don't know if any refs want to be refereeing games in Colorado. I don't know if it's as nice as, Dubai and everything else, the Middle East, as luxury hotels and everything. I don't know if there's the Burj Khalifa or whatever it's called in Colorado compared to Abu Dhabi. That's the thing.
But it did make me laugh inwardly, grimace outwardly, when you had those two Man City players after the game having a go at us for dark arts. I mean, come on. I've watched Man City for years now, even when they were the best team, and they have been for years. Even when it wasn't going their way, the dark arts came out. I saw it at the Emirates a few times, falling over for penalties, crying to the ref, blocking people, those little niggly little fouls when someone was getting a little bit of momentum. That's in the game. I don't like to see it, but it happens in the game. And if Man City players are crying about it, it's like hypocrisy on steroids, in my opinion.
Well, this goes into the next big debate that I wanted to have, because like we said at the start, there's so much to get into, Melvin. Obviously, that first half ends, I'm a bit downtrodden because I'm like, oh, all that good hard work, Trossard. And I knew that an attacking player would be sacrificed to bring a defender on. I didn't think it'd be Ben White, because obviously what they said about the knee, I thought, we might go for Kivior now, see what he's about. But obviously Saka got taken off. Now, I don't know if Saka, that was one where it was a bit precautionary because obviously he did come off against Tottenham and then he come off again, didn't he, on the Thursday. So I don't know if he's one of them where he probably was at about a 60, I'm not good to play, 40, I am good to play, but screw it. You know, he's got, you've got the armband on, you're playing type of thing. I mean, Saka, I think even if he's got one leg hanging off, he's still going to want to play. It's just how he is. A lot of people think that it's Arteta not letting him play. I think a lot of it's the player as well. He wants to play every single minute of every single game because that's just how he's wired. So obviously, yeah, he comes off for Ben White. And then I think for as long as we could, I saw a side to Arsenal. And I mentioned it in the pod that we did last week as well with you and Michael. I have been brought up on the Wenger era. I saw the end of George Graham, bit of the Stuart Houston and everybody else that coming in between Rioch and what have you. But I was raised on Wenger, which was possession football at all times. There's a few games where I could see some kind of defensive performance. I mean, I go to Villarreal away in the Champions League where we won the penalty shootout or what have you. Games like that where I thought we defended really well. But yeah, I'm used to Arsenal being a possession-based team, goes at people. And that at the weekend finally answered a lot of questions for me about, I've always had questions about Arteta's in-game management, but also how he handles things in an emotional state, because I've seen him react emotionally and that's hurt the team. You know, I look at Anfield when we're winning, Granit Xhaka then pushes Trent. He gets into a ding dong with Klopp. That brings Liverpool back into it. We don't get the win. They get the draw, et cetera, et cetera. There's points dropped there. I thought he handled this as, and the players as well handled this brilliantly. I saw a side to us, which I've got no problems if we ever play like that again. And there's a big, big consensus online of, and it's mainly opposition fans that are saying that what we did was anti-football. What we did was cowardly. Now, last year, I saw Spurs go down to 9 men against Chelsea, get slapped, but yet they were given a purple heart for bravery by all the pundits. Melvin, were we... With it, you know, you watch a lot of the games like I do, not just Arsenal, but you watch football in general. Now, without taking the biases out of it, we are statistically, even from last season and going into this season, we're the best defence in the league, are we not?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's the thing that this team's the best at. So why is it a negative that Arsenal go, we're going to play, you know, a 6-4 formation pretty much, and you come and break us down? Because when Atalanta did that against Arsenal in midweek, they were praised for how well they defended and didn't let Arsenal break them down. When teams go into a low block against Arsenal, you know, Brighton the other week when we played them, okay, we were down to, but there was a bit of it before everything happened where, oh, this is a resolute Brighton side, they're not letting Arsenal through, you know, they've got their bank, they've got their two there and their four there and they're not letting off. But why is it, I mean, I guess I know the answer, but why is it such a negative when Arsenal do it compared to everybody else?
Because it's Arsenal, and you know, that's the honest answer. I mean, and these so-called judges, I mean, they will change their mind so quickly on one incident. It tells you how they don't watch a game sometimes correctly with their eyes, because they make the man of the match the goal scorer so many times, and you look at a game and go, no, they've just got a good goal, but, and that made the difference, but if it's man of the match, not man of the moment, you've got to give it to this geezer here. What he did, he was outstanding, or that geezer. They give us a lazy answer, man of the match, and their biases now are allowed to show through. They don't even hide it, a lot of the commentators now. Well, I'm talking about the actual guy who commentates, they're number two, or the people in the studio. I mean, on Sunday, I didn't have the commentary on. Couldn't stand it. They were driving me mad. And it's a good commentator normally, but I just thought, they're talking for the sake of talking now. I'm watching the game, leave me alone, I'm turning them off. I turn the commentary down. In fact, I thought that it was 2-1 at half-time for a second, because I'm watching the game, and I saw Arteta get up and turn his back. So I thought, oh, he's going down the tunnel. And then all of a sudden, the camera swung and we're still playing. And I thought, well, I hope we don't do anything silly now. I let him go. I didn't think we were going to have anyone sent off, obviously. And that's what happened. But no, I turned them down because they will praise the other team for doing less than Arsenal on a game. If they suddenly spin a ball 20 yards, it'll be the most amazing ball ever. Arsenal do it, they say, oh yeah, could have given it a bit harder, or it's just behind him, or this. It's like, no, it's the same ball that you thought was brilliant, I mean, for that team, but we're doing the same thing, and you're not praising us. So I don't respect them, not at all, don't respect them. If they can't be honest, I don't respect them.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like you mentioned earlier, you saw it on a tweet and you wish you saved it and could have shared it and everything else. There was a guy who, I want to say his at was something like RKITM or something. He's an Arsenal fan. And there was someone that was saying about Arsenal and the way that we were laying down for the cramps and everything and everything else. For me, Arsenal had 5 leg breaks in 7 years. Serious, serious leg breaks. And we got called soft. We had players saying that we had no cojones, just, bottler Arsenal, all this other, stuff that was coming out. And I look at it there, and we put in a resolute defensive performance for as long as we possibly could. And again, the game overrun by the time that was allocated on the clock. And we nearly saved it. He was facing the wrong way and he still nearly saved it. That's how.
Well, that's something. I think that if you're going to talk about the equaliser, which Man City think was a winner, if you're talking about.
Can't celebrate draws though, Melvin.
Oh, remember sorry that. About that. Yeah. what were people had? They spoke about, well, they've been knocking on the door, City, and da da da. But hold on, if they've been knocking on the doors, they had near chances and it was going, hitting the post, doing this, doing that, and they were cutting us apart. Their equalising goal was lucky. It got shot in. It could have gone anywhere. It got saved initially, came out. It could have gone to anyone. They didn't plan it that way. It's not as... Let me stop someone. Sorry, someone's phoning. Mikel should not phone this late at night. Anyway.
See, talking about the lineup tomorrow before you...
he'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've lost... Yeah. Their goal was a lucky goal. It was a goal. It counts, obviously. But they were talking to commentators after the game, I listened. And I'm going, knocking on the door. Da, da, da. No, it was a lucky goal. Called it a lucky goal. It wasn't well playing. You keep trying mud, something's going to stick sometimes. So I thought that would roll me up as well, apart from letting in that late goal. Oh, let me just think. This is it. No, I can't even give them a message. I can give them a message on my phone. Sorry. I might
That's
do
okay.
that in a minute.
Yeah.
Right. So, it was it. We let in that goal, and it was, so as you said, it was over 97 minutes. But the point you're making about, for example, who went down with cramp, it was Martinelli, right?
Well, all three players that went down with the cramp, Melvin, all got taken off.
That's the point I want to make. They all got taken off. But secondly, what you've got to remember, which no one mentioned on the telly because it's pro Arsenal, is that we played on a Thursday night away from home, right? Yeah. They played on a Wednesday night at home. We were down to 10 men. They had 11. You might get cramped. You don't know. Funny old game. They never mentioned that. When you're playing at that level and you've got to run, stop, mentally it's tiring as well. It's not unusual. You've played 48 hours before or 72 hours before to get cramped. And the other team's got an extra mat. No, Neil's here. Got an extra man and had another day's rest and didn't travel, which knocks it out of you as well, travelling. That was all forgotten about. Oh, they've got cramp. I wonder why they've got cramp. Nah, it's all bias, mate. It's all bias.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they were saying about, like you said, about dark arts or, game managements and everything else like that. But I was like, okay, so if we're doing that, we're delaying the game from being played, so then the ball's going to be given to Arsenal, But yet you're saying that whenever Arsenal had the ball, we're not doing anything with it. So the ball's going to go back to Man City. You know, by your consensus, the ball's going to go back to you.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. You know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, there was so much that I saw about, Jurrien Timber and Kai Havertz didn't have a single successful pass in the game. Well, yeah, because, you know, whatever the game plan probably was for the second half got completely changed on its head when Trossard did what he did and got sent off.
What I like is when we went down to 10, I know that it's anti-football, if you like, but I like we were kicking the ball out of touch and making it a non-football game.
Yeah.
It was like telling the ref, all right, you want to put us down to 10 men? This is what we're going to do. We're going to ruin this. And after the game, they said it was a fantastic second half. No, it was. It was boring, mate. I was a supporter. I was wrapped up in it. So I don't find it boring or exciting. It's just for me, I was just concentrating. I was in the zone. But for a negative, an independent guy, a neutral, I reckon that might be negative.
I'm watching this for
it. It's like a game of chess. And I think we purposely did it that way.
100%. Yeah, I mean, for me, I was quite proud of, again, what Havertz did from a defensive aspect. But also, when he did get up there, I think he's very clever, a bit like what Giroud did back in the day. Maybe not as elite as Giroud was, but the way he can hold it up and draw a foul. Yeah. I think Havertz is getting better at that all the time. And because of how long his legs and everything, he's really good at, before a ball gets trapped, he can like stick his leg there and drag it back and then that pulls someone in. And Timber, for me, especially that second half, there wasn't a lot of highlights going forward. But when he was coming round, he was one of our only few players that was trying to win the ball back as high up as possible. And
what about that run he did, Neil, near the end on the touchline? And he beat about three players in about 3 inches. I mean, it's silly.
We've
got a player there. We've got a bit of a player
Exactly. And I don't think he's been allowed to show the real side of the game that he was brought for, because all the games that he's had to play this season have all been really defensive games.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. People are going on about Arsenal's XGs within the bottom four of the league, Arsenal's possessions in the bottom four or five of the league. If that continues after these games against Leicester, Southampton, etc., I'll start to worry.
Yeah.
But at the moment, in the game states that we've been in and everything else, I can't help but be proud of what we've done. I honestly look at the weekend, and as much as I was deflated and everything, I was so proud of how well we did. And if you said to me we'd get a point before the ball was kicked, I'd have took it. So I can't be angry at the fact we only got a point after.
No, we didn't want them 5 points ahead of us this type of season.
Exactly.
And the that have been in our heads 5 points ahead this beginning of the season, it had been like our shoulder would have dropped a bit. And you're already thinking Leicester at home on Saturday. It's pressure game. It's always a pressure game, but even more so. We cannot afford to have any mistakes against Leicester if they'd have beaten us on Sunday.
Exactly. And again, like I was saying before, it's just seeing a more mature, a more strong Arsenal team than I've seen in a very, very long time, potentially that I've ever seen. Because, like I said before, sadly, I was born in 91 and I missed that era of George Graham in 89, in 91, that played that more defensive level of football that people did call negative and everything else. But was it negative? I don't think so, because it won us our only European trophy. One of our only European trophies in our history.
Two league titles and the League Cup.
Exactly. A cup double.
How boring is that?
Yeah.
You say boring. Go back to Man City. I think they're boring.
Yeah.
Flicking it about backwards, sideways. They do that at home as well. Neil's in the room, as we know, and also Mike's in the room.
Yeah. No, both of them absolutely spot on. I mean, Mike here, where he said about the Athletic taking swipes at us. Again, it's just anger, because they're used to Man City winning everything at a canter, or Liverpool, you know. We all know what happened with Liverpool, and the media are scared to critique Liverpool, because if you take Liverpool on, it is at your peril. If anyone that's ever been anti-Liverpool ever has felt the price, so you don't do it. And for me, I hope it continues, Melvin, because if people hate us as much as they're hating us now, it shows that we're doing something right.
Correct.
Because they're fearing us. They're scared. And that was the one thing I will say. Man City looked scared to me. When after the weekend, they were celebrating, and they weren't celebrating like we got a point there. They're celebrating, like you said, by bloody hell, how lucky were we that we got that. And then all their player, I mean, I don't know what player of theirs didn't do an interview after the weekend, because every single one of them's released a statement about how Arsenal this, how Arsenal that. And you say about Haaland, I mean, there he's telling Arteta to be humble, and yet in the next instance, he's going up to a 17-year-old kid who's just made his debut. Who the F are you to Skelly?
No, but
I'm like, you're a 6'4", 6'5" grown man shoving about and swearing at a 17-year-old kid. I'm like, just
number nutties. One, James, when he did that to Arteta, he was showing him no respect, right? Can you imagine what would have happened? Double standards. If, let's talk about any player, let's talk about Havertz going up to Pep at the end of the game and giving him something. It would not have stopped. The press would have had such a go at our player. It would have been unbelievable. It would have been shown on Sky Sports. It would have been shown on prayers on Sunday. It would be shown everywhere. You know what I mean? It not a lot was made out of it, you know? That was disgraceful what he did. You very rarely get players and managers from different teams doing that type of thing. And sorry, no. I'm not impressed with him anyway. He's just very disrespectful. And that's where they are. As they say, you can't buy class.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I didn't really see many interviews from the Arsenal side of things other than Arteta's. But Gabriel did an interview with, I don't know if it was TNT in Brazil or TSN in Brazil. I can't remember which one it was. And obviously, I don't speak Portuguese, so I've only gone through the translation. And the big throwaway comment that he made was, I can't wait till they try that in our house. So he's already ticking the days down on his calendar for when the reverse fixture is, because I think he's going to, as much as Saliba and him want Haaland anyway, I think he's going to be like, I hope that you're in there, Erling, because I'm having you next time.
There was someone I saw interviewed after the game in Arsenal, player, who was it? It was, can't remember the right back name. It was Calafiore.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, there, that's right. Yeah. But obviously, is there anything else you want to touch on, Melvin? For me, I know that you said earlier about the man and the match. I've been lazy, but this is how I did. For me, I've been lazy because I've done it for both the two games. And for me, he was. That second half, he claimed everything high. There was the Haaland header, which was the only time Saliba done something wrong against him all game. He just leapt over him, and he done it with the one hand, didn't he, where he swooped it away. He has been Arsenal's player of the season so far. I don't like the fact that I'm saying the goalkeeper's been our best player, but I have to call it as I see it. And he's been sensational. I know, obviously, Saka won the player of the month for the last month, and that's done by a fan vote online and everything else like that. But I think any Arsenal fan really should be going, it was Reyes' player of the month, not Saka's, really.
Totally agree. He's been outstanding. He's improved levels. He was okay when he joined us. He was okay. He was good. He was good, but he's now levels. He's now, you would never think you'll swap the goalkeepers back again to where we were 12 months ago. 12 months ago, you're thinking, well, it's even Steven. Can't see why the manager's done it. I think that Ramsdale's better on certain points. I think this key is, although I haven't seen a lot of him, he's better on other points, but he's not good at that. Now, you'd never swap back now, would you? You would never swap back. It's just, he comes out with the saves you don't expect him to make. And that's how you judge a goalkeeper. It's all right making the ones you should make. It's the ones you shouldn't make. And he's done quite a few of those recently. So, and he gives the defence even more confidence. I know they're very happy with Ramsdale, the defence, you know, and all the camaraderie and all that. But you can feel they feel very, very comfortable with him at the back. So, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, I was one of the few that was actually over the moon when we first got him in, because I said he is, you know, as much as I liked Ramsdale, I was like, this guy is a better goalkeeper in just every single metric, even though he plays for Brentford and what have you. I was like, he is a better goalkeeper. And finally, obviously, people, and I think the players, like you said, they were very upset because that was a big character in their dressing room, a vocal character in their dressing room. And like you said there, they grew with him. The way I think he's grown as well as the players have grown. And I think a lot of that was from when we had that penalty shootout last season against Porto. I think a lot of the way those players run over to him at the end, I think that's when they finally were like, okay, you are what the manager's, you know, Arteta's changed it and we can see why he's changed it. And I think now he's really starting to get love, not just from the fans, but from everybody, really. I think on current form, again, I'm taking my bias away from it. I'd say he's right up there with, I think Edison's dropped off in terms of being one of the best in the league. I think it's between him and Alisson. I really do. Yeah. I think them two are the best in the league by far.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Melvin, was there anything else you want to touch on about the game before I quickly move into the next?
No, don't think so. No, I'm happy with that. Very happy with that.
Well, so obviously next up we got Bolton tomorrow night in the Carabao Cup. People are expecting a lot of wholesale changes. I don't think there'll be as many as what people want. I don't think he's going to play as many as the kids as what used to be back in the day. I think he's going to go quite strong, which I don't mind because I like I said last night with Michael, I'm greedy. I want to win everything, Melvin. So.
Well, we've had a lot of games in a short period of time. I think that he will make changes. You've got to make the goalkeeper change. That's number one. We're talking about a 16-year-old might be playing tomorrow night.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they will play Sterling here, but he's a...
Oh, I think they have to.
Right. They will play Sterling. They will play Manwari. Doesn't sound like it's spelled, does it? Manwari. Yeah, I think he'll start. I'd like to see him start anyway. I don't think Nelson will play because he's at Fulham. That's what I'm going to say. But
he wouldn't play even if he was with us.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
So Kiwar, I think, will play. I think they'll play him, give him some more time. And there will be a couple of kids playing. The one that came on, the one that got booked before he came on the pitch.
Yeah. Skelly. Yeah, he'll play. Would you play Rice tomorrow, Melvin? Because I've seen a lot of people say they wouldn't.
I wouldn't play him, no.
Oh, really? No. Okay. Because I said today that I would, because you need to get him up to speed. I know it's a big risk because it's obviously a team that's in League One. They're probably going to kick you about a bit potentially. Exactly. But yeah.
But listen, well, let's enjoy it tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I'm not as worried as you about winning it. I'd like to win it, obviously, but I think there's... we've got to concentrate on the league and the European Champions League.
Definitely. And then obviously we've got Leicester at home at the weekend. It's a nice 3:00 finally. I know there hasn't been many.
What do you think of that, eh? We're playing and Leicester tomorrow. Saturday and Leicester.
Saturday, 3:00 game. Brilliant.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah, so just quickly, if I was to ask for a prediction for tomorrow and then one for Saturday before we wrap it up.
3-0 tomorrow, 2-0 on Saturday.
Brilliant. Yeah, I will take both of them. And Melvin, if everybody else, like they normally do, has enjoyed listening to you more so than me tonight, where can they find you and where can they hear more from you, Melvin?
I'm going to call you me then, like Neil said.
the best one for me at the moment is, and I'm determined to try and get it before the end of the season, I need to get Neil to pronounce Calafiori.
All right.
he keeps calling him Rico because he's like, I can't get it right. I'm like, he will.
Yeah, I struggle a bit with that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm on Twitter. As you say, on the handle there. I'm on the transfer show normally. And that's my main two. My main two. And this one, obviously. This one, of course.
Brilliant.
And I'm on Mike's on Sunday.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, hopefully Jerome will join us. I'm not sure yet.
That'll be fantastic. I look forward to that one then. Yeah. That's class. All right then. Well, thank you very much as always, Melvin. And thanks everybody else that's joined. Going to play the outro now. And just don't let anything negative be said about the weekend, because that was a bloody good point in context. It'll be one that we'll come back to and go, do you know what? That was a good point against Man City there. But yeah, thanks very much, everybody. Take care.
Thanks, James. Thanks very much again.
No, you're welcome. Anytime. Take care, everybody.